All right, good morning, church. Welcome to Highland Square. So good to be with you guys. We're going to go ahead and take our offering now. Deacons, come on down and serve us. If you are a guest, if you are new here, just visiting, so thankful that you are here. Just want you to know that this is not for you. This is for those of us that call this place our home. So if you're new, love that you're here. We've got a welcome table in the back. Christian is here, and we'd love to answer any questions that you guys may have. Okay, so you guys can tell that there's something different going on because we have all of our young friends with us this morning. And they're here with us this morning because this morning is a bittersweet morning. Miss Michelle Gregory, come on up. Let's welcome Michelle to the front. Can we welcome her? I say that it is bittersweet, and you'll know why here in a second, but in the fall of 2016... Michelle left a very comfortable and routine-ized position that she had at the Hudson campus and felt a call to come down here and to help us get things figured out, which we needed desperately. And so for 3 years, Michelle has been here and doing two things. One, she's been leading these folks right here, right? All the young people that you see in front of us. She's been pouring herself out for them through the week, preparing for Sunday, pouring herself into them, and then in addition to kids ministry, has also been administrating our campus and making everything happen, right? So Michelle is a strong woman, but her shoulders are stronger than you know, because she's been keeping so many things happening around here for 3 years. Liken Michelle to a faithful soldier, right? Whatever is in front of her, no matter how difficult, no matter how trying it may be, she will figure it out and she will make it happen. And she has been awesome for us, serving us for 3 years. It's fitting this morning that her disciples would be gathered here in front of her because this is not officially Michelle's last week. Next week is actually her official last week. But we wanted to just honor her publicly this week in front of us. Michelle is taking a position at First Glance, which is a ministry in Kenmore. Very cool. So Michelle just keeps taking steps further and further into the city because it just God's call is on her, and she's just being faithful to take those steps. And so this morning we wanted to honor her publicly, her labor on our behalf, on behalf of all of these young folks that are here. And we've got a gift. So Miss Emily, come on out. We've got a gift for Michelle on behalf of all of us. Yep, let's give Michelle a hand. And here come all of her little friends. Big hugs. Oh, man. Now, I don't know what you're doing with your life, but that's a legacy that I think it'd be good for all of us to leave, something a little bit like that. So Michelle will be here next week, but we wanted to honor her this week just because it just made sense for us to do it. So thank Michelle. We actually have some cards, some blank cards that you can fill out downstairs. After the service, we'd invite you to go down. Just thank Michelle. If she's poured into your kid, if you've been a part of a ministry that she has just helped to make it function and to run smoothly, just throw her a thanks. And we love her and have been thankful to receive her contributions, her giftings, and her energy poured out for this place. And just to let you know, Michelle is moving on, but we've got some awesome folks stepping in. Mayana and Brock, would you guys come up just for a second? So a really cool thing, for the last year, Mayana has been serving with, side by side with Michelle. Michelle's been mentoring Mayana. Mayana just graduated with a degree in elementary education. So her heart is leaning into kids, has been. And so Mayana is kind of stepping in. Brock, in addition, they're going to kind of team it up and figure out kids ministry together moving into the next year. So you're going to hear from them, not this week because we've got a lot going on, but next week we're going to hear their hearts for kids and then wrap a whole bunch of y'all up into what is next for our kids ministry. So just wanted you to see them. That's what's next, and we'll hear from them next week. So guys, thanks. Before a coup breaks out, get downstairs. You got We got kids running the hallways right now. It's crazy down there. So we got to get Brock and Michelle back down there quick. Okay, so, and I told you guys last week that I was going to introduce the interns. I'm going to. We're just going to do that at the end of the service, okay? So interns are coming. I know you guys are looking forward to seeing them and meeting them. Okay, so turn in your Bibles, 2 Samuel chapter 16, and we're going to continue in the series entitled Verses, where we're looking at how we should think about and see and even interact with those who don't like us, those who would call us their enemies, those who are positioned adversarially against us, and kind of getting God's heart on this and what he would say and speak into that. And so I want us to look at a story in 2 Samuel chapter 16. We're going to read through. I'll give context as we go because we're picking this thing up midstream. But let's read. We'll dig in, and the story will make sense when it makes sense. Okay? 2 Samuel chapter 16. And this story is about a guy named David who at the time some things are going on, and he's got an adversary, and we're going to lean in and see how David deals with this person who is coming against him. 2 Samuel 16, starting in verse 5. When King David came to Bahurim, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul. Saul was the first king of Israel whom David took over for. The man who came out, his name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And as he came, he cursed continually. Right? This is a PG message right here. If I were to say the things that are coming out of Shimei's mouth, we'd go straight to rated R. We're not going to do that. And thankfully, the Bible doesn't list all of the things, the curses that are coming out of Shimei's mouth at and towards David. Verse 6. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his, David's right hand and on his left. Okay, so just a little context in the story here. The reason why David and his companions are on the move outside of Jerusalem is because something horrible is happening back in Jerusalem. And the horrible thing is that David's son, Absalom, has kicked David off of the throne and is performing, as we speak, a coup. Meaning he's taking over power, and Absalom is seeking to kill his own father so that he can be solidified as the new king of Israel, right? Horrible circumstances. I don't know, when I was a kid, there was a children's book. Some of you guys remember this. It was called Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, right? Some of you guys have read that, right? This is David's day right now. Kicked off the throne, son trying to kill him, out just running for his life with this small, ragged band of loyal followers while most of the people have betrayed him, right? So David is dealing with all of this. And can we just for a moment, can we empathize with him and say, wow, like this is a hard time for David. And then on this day of all days, as he's running for his life with this ragged band of the few loyal people that are with him, this guy comes out and just starts cursing him and throwing stones at him. I don't know how accurate he is, but David is probably maybe every fifth or sixth stone getting hit with stones as the curses are coming. This is a rough time. Okay? Verse 7. And Shimei said as he cursed, get out, you man of blood, you worthless man. The Lord has avenged on you all the blood of the house of Saul in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. Ha, ha, ha. You're not going to see that in the scriptures, but right, he's just mocking him, laughing. Ha, you're getting what's due you, David. And then Shimei closes with this. See, your evil is on you, for you are a man of blood. Okay, a little more context. The scriptures already told us here, but Shimei is of the extended family of Saul, who was the first king of Israel. And because he's a family member of Saul, he sees it as his duty to be against David, because David is ruling on the throne in place of Saul, right? So Shimei sees himself as an enemy of David. Now, this must be stirring up for David a whole bunch of things that have happened in his little more distant past, right? Because Saul, the man who Shimei is a family member of, Saul, when he was alive, caused all kinds of grief for David. All kinds of trouble did Saul to David. Right? At one point, actually at several points, when Saul was still alive, David was literally, like he is right now, he was running for his life because Saul was trying to kill him, right? Saul looked at David while Saul was on the throne and saw someone whose God's hand was on, who had all the elements or the giftings of a king, and Saul knew he wasn't doing things very well, and Saul was freaked out that maybe God was going to stick David on the throne, and so what did Saul do? Well, he just tried to murder David multiple times, right? And David is running for his life. All these things are stirring back up, right? So the narrative early on was this. It was King Saul versus David, meaning King Saul hated David and wanted to see him killed. Right, but the reciprocal narrative was not true. It wasn't true that David was versus Saul. See, that never happened. Because all the while Saul was attempting to kill David, David honored Saul. He actually sought to protect him, to maintain his dignity. There was a couple points where Saul was going after David to kill him, and David had the opportunity to kill him. And David said, no, I will not do that. It is not my place to do that. I will entrust this to the Lord. But as for me, I will honor him, for he is the king, right? So David lived in this adverse relationship, Saul versus David. David is then reciprocating that with honor and respect and dignity and peace, right? And so here on this day of all days, a representative from Saul's family, stirring all that history back up, is saying, ha, David, you are getting what is due you. You did it wrong with Saul. You wronged him. You've done ill things towards him. Now you're getting what you deserve, okay? Now that's got to weigh pretty heavy on David, on particular of all days on this day, right? This is where David is at now, right? Verse 9. Then Abishai is one of David's mighty men, right? Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, King David, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Okay, let me go over and take off his head. Right? Okay, great. That's a suggestion, right? So David's soldiers who were all around him, they've got an idea, and their idea is David's team versus Shimei, right? And the particulars of how David's team thinks they should be versus Shimei is, let's try this. Let's separate his head from his body and see what happens. That's cool. Let's do that, right? That's their idea. Now, just to give you insight into how gutsy Shimei is being here, right? We all know from the history here that David is a warrior, a valiant warrior. And he's surrounded by his warriors, but most particularly, because we just read this, on his left and on his right are his mighty men. Now, his mighty men are, to that day, what the Navy SEALs are to today, right? They're like the best of the best. And here's Shimei just cursing and throwing stones, and David's Navy SEALs say, hey, it's us versus him. Let us go take care of this small problem, right? Now, verse 10. I want to tell you, the first time I read verse 10 of this chapter at some point in my history. But the first time I remember reading it was a couple of months ago as I'm doing my bedtime routine with my kids. I've been taking them through 2 Samuel, reading through just out loud, chapter or so at a time. And I came to verse 10, and as I'm reading to my kids, I nearly fell out of my chair because I know people and I know my own heart. And what we're going to see come out of David here is abnormal. And it's beautiful, and we're going to dissect it. Here's David's response to David, let us separate his body from his head. Okay, verse 10. But the king said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, right, you Navy SEALs? If Shimei is cursing because the Lord has said to him, curse David, who then can say, why have you done so? Think about this. David, on this day, this family member of Saul, accusing him, cursing him, and throwing stones at him, David is open to the possibility that the Lord may be telling him something through the vehicle of someone who hates him. Let me say that one more time, just to get a little, should we shake it off first time, right? David is open to the possibility that the Lord God Almighty might be trying to speak to him something through the vehicle of this individual who hates him. That's a wow. Proverbs 27:6 says this, "The wounds of a friend can be trusted." Okay, what that means is, right, in God's ideal scenario, that we would have people who love us and who know us deeply and love us deeply, who would be able over the course of time to observe certain things about us and our lives that are out of balance with the shalom flourishing of God. That they would be able to see that because they know us and they live life with us, and that according to their love, they would be able to verbalize some of the ways where we are diverging from or off from the path of the things that God would have for us. That's God's ideal, right? But the truth is that so often we don't navigate friendships like that, right? So often we're afraid that if we were to speak this thing into the life of someone we know and love, then maybe the relationship couldn't handle that, and it might turn the relationship sideways and things might go weird. So we oftentimes don't say what we would call hard things to the people that we love, right? So the wounds of a friend can be trusted. God's ideal doesn't regularly happen in our friendships, right? But here's also another truth, that those who hate us will often and regularly say hard things to us or about us. Oftentimes, they will say brutal things. They'll say more than should be said, and they'll say some things that even aren't that true, right? But the idea is that those who don't like us have little problem saying mean things about us that they may or may not accurately be seeing, right? So here's David. And Shimei comes cursing him. And let's just assume for the sake of math and percentage ease that Shimei comes and throws 100 accusations at David, right? And we already know that the majority of the accusations are coming because of David's treatment with him and Saul, which we also know from 2 Samuel that David navigated that thing really well, right? So let's just say that 99 of the 100 accusations that Shimei is bringing are false, wrong, untrue. But let's say that maybe one of them might have a ring of truth to it, right? In response to that, what David does is he's open to the one possible true thing that Shimei might be saying about him, to where David literally says, no, we're not going to attack him, we're not going to oppose him, resist him, because the Lord might be saying some true things about me that I need to see, right? Now, no one can say that unless the Lord over time has worked into them a deep posture of humility. Right? You can't say that. You can't receive these accusations, the majority of which we know are wrong. You can't receive that and say, hey, the Lord might be speaking to me here. Some of these things might be true. I may need to ponder these things further. You can't say that unless your heart is postured in a place of humility, right? Which means that David, over the years, has been sliced and diced, cut, attacked, reviled so many times that the pride has melted out of the brother, right? Then he is walking in humility, which allows him to be open to the fact that maybe his enemy is speaking some truth, right? But here's what most of us regularly do. We don't allow our enemies to serve us. We don't allow our enemies to say things that might reveal some things that we may need to hear. We don't allow that to happen because we're not walking in humility. But what we do is we walk in pride. And here's what pride looks like, right? It would look like Shimei leveling 100 accusations against David or whoever is against you, throwing 100 things out there that are adversarial against you. And that you, right, maybe 99 of those things, you're like, wow, there might be some truth in some. The 99, maybe there's something there, right? But let's say one of them, 1% of the accusations you know to be false, 100% wrong, right? What pride does is says, ha, you said this one thing, you're wrong. I can clearly show you and everybody else why you're wrong. And then from that position, we reject everything we say, and we say, and now Abishai, off with the brother's head. Right? Be gone with you. Get out of my life. Stop speaking to me. You have died to me. I can't literally kill you because things wouldn't go well for you, right? But proverbially speaking, I'm going to cut your head off and marginalize you, right? That's what pride does, right? It focuses on the one thing that has to be wrong because we know it's wrong and then rejects everything else, right? Let's continue in the story, verse 11. And David said to Abishai, the Navy SEAL that says, let's separate his head from his body, right? David continues to speak. And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, the other warriors, he says, behold, my own son seeks my life. Absalom is back in Jerusalem trying to off me right now. That's my flesh and blood. How much more now may this Benjaminite? Leave him alone. And let him curse, for the Lord has told him to do so, or may have told him to do so. It may be that the Lord will look on the wrong done to me, and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing today. So many things happening in these two verses. Let's just draw out a couple, right? The first thing is that David actually has an empathetic stance towards Shimei. He understands where he's probably coming from emotionally, right? David says, my own son, who I reared and raised, is trying to kill me right now. Of course this guy hates me. He's of the family of Saul. Of course he wants to see me dead. That's where he's at. Of course he's going to be there, right? Right? That's the first thing. Here's the second thing that's going on. David, in this circumstance, in deep humility, is entrusting himself to the Lord, right? He's entrusting himself to the Lord. In David's mind, the judgments and the thoughts and the opinions of God are so heavy and so weighty that it allows him to exit the horizontal, relational, human, dysfunctional world that he's experiencing right now with accusations and stones. It allows him to exit the horizontal and then to lean into the vertical, right? Because that's where David really cares about, right? God's judgments, God's opinions, God's thoughts. That's where David wants to go, right? God's opinion on this is what is central. Right now, regarding this, I think this will be very helpful for us to navigate some things in our own heart as we dissect this passage. Right? What we have to recognize is that there is a very distinct difference between your character and your reputation. Okay? Those two things are very, very, very different things, right? Let's be clear on this. Your character is who you are or who you are not, right? And it is or it isn't. Regardless of what other people believe about you, your character is or it is not. Now, your reputation, on the other hand, your reputation is who people believe you to be, regardless of who you really are. So, put it this way, a bad character person can be seen with a great reputation, right? You can be a horrible person and be greatly respected. And you can also be a great person, have the utmost integrity and character, and you can have a reputation of being a horrible person, right? There's a difference between who you are and what people think of you. Now, here's what David has learned over the years. David has learned to hold his character, who he is, how he operates, how he engages with people, the things that are happening inside his mind and his heart. David has learned to hold on to his character so tightly, to follow the Lord, to hear his voice, to do what's right. And as he has learned to grasp grab a hold of his character tightly, he has simultaneously learned to let go and to hold his reputation very loosely, which allows him to walk on this horrible day, his throne's being taken, his son is seeking his life, and this old enemy that, well, David was an enemy of his, but Saul was his enemy, this representative from his family is cursing him, throwing stones at him. It allows David to say, my character is intact. What this guy says about me, what he's going to do, I'm not going to hold that very tight. I'm going to hold that very loosely. All right, but what we do regularly, what comes naturally and normally to us, is that what we do is we cling tightly to our reputation, what other people think of me, while we're also holding our character very loosely. Right? Don't live like that. Please don't do that. Let me tell you a story. A month ago, a month and a half, midsummer, in the neighborhood where Megan and I live, there was a one house that borders our property where there was a growing mess of dysfunction. Just put it that way, right? Dysfunctionality was growing. The meter was beginning to peak in the house. And the reason why I knew that is because I could hear some things, and a couple of the kids that were there were hanging out at our house quite a bit. And so I got to know these kids pretty well. And so there's one night, it's 11:15, 11:30 at night, I'm in bed, I'm reading, my window's open, and I hear a voice yelling. I can kind of hear where it's coming from. And I know the voice. It's one of these kids. And then after I hear the yelling voice at 11:15, 11:30 at night, then I hear this car door slam, this tire screeching out down the street. And so immediately I hop out of bed, I throw some clothes on, I run down. Megan's downstairs because she's the night owl in the relationship at this point in time. And I say, Megan, did you hear a scream? She says, yeah, I did. So I tear out, trying to decide, do I call the police? Do I head out? I just decide it's probably best for me to head out. And so I head to the back of our property, where our property is about 8 feet above this whole line of houses. And then Pastor Brian starts a stakeout. Okay? I'm just sitting, it's 11:30 at night, and I'm just there, and I'm watching, and I'm listening, and I'm listening, and I'm watching, because I want to know if there's something going on down there that I need to insert myself into, because I know this is a dysfunctional thing happening here, and I want to protect the kids. And so I'm there, like 5-10 minutes go by, just watching and listening, and then all of a sudden, this police car rolls up to a house about three houses up, and I'm like, oh, okay, somebody called the police, awesome, because I want to kind of get this thing on the radar of some civic authority at some level, right? So the police show up, and I'm like, okay, I think this is safe. I don't hear anything. And so then I walk down our property to a clearing where I could then walk down the 8 feet through some shrubs and a tree and then engage the police officer and just talk to him about, you know, what's going on, what I saw. And as I come down the hill, apparently I was a little bit noisy, and the police officer who was talking to somebody else heard me and started to freak out a little bit, okay? So the officer says, Paul, watch my microphone. I don't want to break anybody's ears here, right? I'm going loud. Police officer says, stop, hold it right there. Stop. I'm like, whoa. Right? I've been around people where their adrenaline spikes. I've had adrenaline spikes, and I can hear it in his voice. Like, brother's freaking out, right? He's like, I just came out of the woods, and he's like, 11:30 at night, Pastor Brian, dirt, right? Here I am. Everything's cool. High five, right? He starts freaking out. It's like, stop. It shines the flashlight on me, so I'm blinded at this point. I can't hear anything. And so I know he's got one hand on the flashlight, and then I hear his other hand doing something else, okay? Now, I don't know all of the tools that a police officer has at his disposal, but what I do know is that he went for one of them, okay? I just can't see. The light's in my eyes, right? So I know right now that I need to go into active listening mode, okay? And so what he says is, stop right there. Stop. I stop. And I just intuitively put my hands up because I've seen movies. I know what to do, right? I put my hands up. Guilty, right? And then as he's walking over, he's giving me these commands, like, you know, get down on your knees and cross your legs. And like, it's like Simon Says. I'm like doing all this stuff. So finally, I'm on the ground. He walks over, and then he got around me, and then he puts the cuffs on me and then stands me up. And he has no idea what in the world's going on. He just knows they got a call, weird stuff going on. And then he sees this weird guy come out of the shrubs, okay? So we walk over to the police car, and like, you know, we're talking for like 15 minutes. He's trying to figure out what in the world is going on and why is this guy out here. And all the while, Megan's watching from the driveway, cursing me and throwing stones at me. Like, come on, right? So finally, the police officer calls Megan. I'm like, you can call my wife. She can, you know, corroborate all this stuff. And me and the officer leave with a high five, right? Okay, but here's the thing. For 15 minutes, I'm standing in the middle of the street with the police lights going like this, and I'm cuffed talking to the police officer. Now, you know what happens in your neighborhood when the police roll up and the lights go on and stuff starts happening, right? You do, right? Everybody, curtains opening, doors open just a little bit, like, what's going on out there? Like, so everybody in the neighborhood sees me. I'm the cuffed guy in the middle of the road. Now, here's the deal, right? Here's why I tell you that story. If my heart were postured in such a way that I held my character loosely and my reputation tightly, that night's gonna ruin my life. Because now I've got to go into public relations mode. I got to hire a marketing firm to do some campaigning in my neighborhood, overstatement, right? But follow me here. I have to do some work to try to inform everybody in the neighborhood that I'm okay, I'm a good citizen. I didn't get arrested. I didn't do anything wrong, right? It's a misunderstanding, ha ha, right? I would have to work to make my reputation come back together in the eyes of my neighbors, right? And this, I just want to say, just publicly right now, that is a slave approach to life, right? So many times we can be a slave to our reputation, right? And I'm not saying I've nailed this thing with my life, but God, similar to David, I'm not as old and I'm not as wise and I'm not as humble as him, but God has done some work in me. And he's brought me to the place where on that night and other places, where he's taught me that I'm supposed to hold my character tightly and my reputation loosely, right? So I know, and I don't care if anybody else knows, I know that the reason why I'm cuffed is because I'm doing the right thing, right? I'm putting myself in a position to intervene if intervention's necessary. I'm trying to engage the police officer without getting hurt to say, hey, this is what's going on down here. Just want to make sure you guys have eyes on it, right? Everybody else is in their house, like hiding. That's great. That's your thing, right? But I'm out there doing the right thing, so my character is intact. And so what that does is it frees me that if everybody else thinks that I'm some sort of scumbag and going downtown and getting locked up, I'm okay with that, right? I'm like, I'm pretty cool with that. And let me tell you, like, this is what God wants to do in all of us. Cling to your character. But regarding your reputation, we just got to be willing to let that thing go, right? Just so that we can be free, right? So David's living this thing out. Verse 13. So David and his men went on the road. They continue walking while Shimei went along on the hillside opposite him and cursed as he went and threw stones at him. And new tactic here from Shimei. And now he's flinging dust. Right? He's taking it up a notch. Shimei's run out of stones. Now he's grabbing at dust, just throwing it at him, right? Verse 14, and the king and all the people who were with him arrived weary at the Jordan, and there they refreshed themselves, right? So David continues, right? The walk of shame from Jerusalem, been ousted, running for his life, getting cursed, stones, now dust. The walk of shame continues, and David chooses to subject himself to it when he very easily could say, Abishai, off with the head, and bam, it's done. He continues to walk in and under the assaults, right? Which means that David is a humble individual. Humble in that he is open to the possibility that maybe David is in the wrong regarding something that he never thought he was in the wrong for, and maybe the Lord is speaking to him through these curses. Not that the curses are God's voice, but that somewhere in there, there may be some truth. David, humbly holding his character tight and his reputation loose. David, happy to entrust himself to his loving father and to lean into the vertical relationship, because that's where he has vested his, it's where he has vested himself, right? I care what my father thinks about me, not so concerned about anybody down here. That's a good place to get to. And it'll change how we interact with those who come against us. Now, am I saying that if your adversary comes against you, curses, stones, dust, that you should just stand there and receive it quietly. Is that what I'm saying? Maybe. Maybe not. It depends. Consider this, that Jesus, like a lamb, was silent before his shearers. Lots of people coming to Jesus, and he just chose to just take it, David style. But there were other times when the religious leaders would come at Jesus, and he would make a defense. He would push back. He would challenge them. David. Sometimes David just took it because it was the right thing to do. But at other times, David pushed back and fought back. The Apostle Paul. Sometimes when he's attacked by his adversaries, sometimes he gives a defense, and sometimes he just flees. So there seems to be a time when we are supposed to take it and receive it, and then there's also a time when we are to speak or to defend in response. Now, how in the world are we supposed to know which is which when someone comes against us? How do we know? Well, the answer is that we have to let the Spirit of God tell us which is which. And he will. He's our shepherd, right? He will lead us and guide us into all truth. He will walk us side by side into all the things that are coming, and he will let us know. But now this is big, because we have to recognize this, that the Spirit of God can only speak to us and lead us when we are walking humbly, when we are holding our character tight and our reputation loose, and when we are trusting in him. Now, if we are walking in these three things, and we ask the Spirit of God, how should I respond? We are positioned to literally hear him lead us and to nudge us into how we should respond. But if, on the other hand, if our adversary is coming against us and saying all kinds of things, but if we are walking in pride, and if we are holding our character loose and our reputation tight, and if we are trusting not in him but in ourselves, it's going to be really hard to hear God's voice. I'll put it this way. God's powerful, but it's going to be impossible for us to hear God because we're not speaking his language. It's like God is speaking Spanish and we're stuck in English and it's not making any sense, right? So when the adversary comes against us, when anything is happening in our lives, right, what we need to do is walk humbly, hold our character tight and our reputation loose, and trust ourselves to him and his opinion of us, and then we are positioned, because we're walking in the language of God, now we're able to hear the Spirit of God lead us, nudge us, speak to us. Band, come on back up. We're going to sing one more song, a couple more songs, but before we do, I want to send us out of here with a passage from Luke. And I want us to just look at Jesus before we head into this next song and just observe how Jesus did it and what Jesus invites us into regarding our enemies. Luke chapter 23, starting in verse 1. See if you see any similarities here with what we just read in David. Then the whole company of them arose. It's the people who are, it's them versus Jesus. This is towards the end here. Then the whole company of them arose and brought him, Jesus, before Pilate. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man misleading our nation and forbidding us to give tribute to Caesar and saying that he himself is Christ, a king." And Pilate asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And he, Jesus, answered him, "You have said so." Then Pilate said to the chief priests and to the crowds, "I find no guilt in this man." But they, the opposition. They were urgent, saying, "He, Jesus, stirs the people up, teaching throughout all Judea, from Galilee, even to this place." And when Pilate heard this, he asked whether Jesus was a Galilean. And when he learned that he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him over to Herod, who was himself in Jerusalem at the time. When Herod saw Jesus, he was very glad, for he had long desired to see him because he had heard about him, and he was hoping to see some sign done by him. Herod wanted to see a three-ring circus, and Jesus was the clown. Verse 9. So Herod questioned him at some length, but Jesus made no answer. The chief priests and the scribes stood by, vehemently accusing him. And Herod, with his soldiers, treated him with contempt and mocked him. Then they arrayed him in splendid clothing, dressed like a king, and sent him back to Pilate. Ha ha, ha ha ha, right? Verse 12, and Herod and Pilate became friends with each other that day, for before this they had been at enmity with each other. Jesus is always bringing people together. But here's Jesus, walking in humility, holding his character tight and his reputation loose, and entrusting himself to his Father to the very end, which just so happens to be the very same thing that he invites each and every one of us into. Let's follow him into it.